copy, and print.
Like Topical Currents Facebook page at facebook.com/topicalcurrents. Join the conversation, post a comment, share links, and see what other listeners are saying at facebook.com/topicalcurrents.
And good afternoon. It is Topical Currents, Monday edition. I'm Bonnie Berman. Joseph Cooper returns tomorrow. Many of us consider our animal companions members of the family, or our children, if you will. Regardless of whether you number among those that do, our pets are an important part of our lives. We're in our At Your Service mode today with veterinarian Dr. Ian Kupke, owner and lead practitioner of Sable Chase Animal Clinic in Kendall. In addition to working with dogs and cats, he's involved with marine mammal rescues of dolphins, manatees, and whales. Welcome, Dr. Kupke.
Thank you.
Great to have you. Also joining us in our studios is Adele Miedes. He's the owner of Canine Advisors. It's a dog training and canine behavior company in South Florida with 21 years of experience. Welcome to you, Adele.
Thank you for having me.
And great to have you. Again, our lines are open for your questions about your pet's health or their behavior. The number is 1-800-743-9576. That's 1-800-743-WLRN. Or you can email radio@WLRN.org, and we'll try to get to as many of you as possible. Why don't we begin by looking at the staggering number of people who are bitten by dogs yearly that I read this number, 4.5 million. Who are generally the victims? And either one of you can answer.
Generally, children. Everybody can be bitten by a dog, but generally it's children. And we can explore why this is. One of the most compelling things I've read about is the way dogs respond to signals that we send to them without knowing it. There's a whole subject about how to approach a dog, how we approach a dog. If you actually walk up to a dog and just get in their face and say, hi, some dogs are going to find that a threat.
Right.
So humans, adults generally don't do that. Children do, because children are very, very open with their affections.
Right.
And what we encourage in children to be open and affectionate with us as adults. With dogs, you've got to basically introduce yourself first. And all sorts of things like a direct gaze to a dog is perceived as a threat. You have to give them sort of a peripheral glance, approach them not full front, but sideways. Give them a chance to get to know you. Hover in their zone for a moment and let them figure you out. And all these things are things that have to be taught.
Right. So what would be the warning signs?
Well, Adele. I would say the first thing you see is that a dog changes his behavior towards you from open to a closed posture. What I would see that is ears back, heads down. Instead of looking at you, they kind of slink away. There is no universal cue. It's basically the sum total of many different things, and there are some dogs that give relatively little warning.
That's right, Doc. Many of those warnings, to make it simple for people to remember, one of the things that I've been teaching for years is the MEAT acronym: mouth, eyes, ears, and tail. So MEAT, M-E-E-T, is something that we should keep in mind whenever we're going to meet another dog, whenever our kids are going to meet another dog, whenever we're going to meet somebody else that may have a dog. We're going to take our dog to the dog park, and he's going to meet other people and dogs. We want to see these different signs: mouth, eyes, ears, and tail. The mouth, generally, if the mouth is open and there's a regular pant, the dog is in a comfortable position.
Okay.
If the mouth is closed, shut, oftentimes that dog is already worried about something. It could be a little squirrel that ran behind you, or it could be the way that you're approaching them. The eyes, a general rule is 3 seconds. We don't want the eyes to focus on a particular target for more than 3 seconds. Meaning, let's say a child is approaching the dog, and now the dog closes his mouth, he gets rigid, and now the eyes are focused directly on that child. Mm-hmm. That's already a sign that perhaps that child should not continue approaching that dog in that manner. And then you have the ears, which in some dogs is more noticeable than others. You have dogs with cropped ears. You have dogs with longer ears. Basically, overall, we're looking for the ear set, the overall motion of the ear. If they go up, a lot of times just straight up, they're very focused on something that maybe like a moving target, a moving cat, a moving squirrel, something to that nature, prey-driven reaction.
Right.
If they're forward, oftentimes, meaning they're up and now pricked slightly forward, oftentimes that's a more dominant stance. If they're pinned back, oftentimes that may show fear or anxiety in a dog. The tail, again, with some dogs more noticeable. Dogs like an English Bulldog, for example, may have a little curly tail tucked up in there. You don't have much to tell. You got to go on the wiggle butt. but with other dogs, even dogs that might have a little stub for a tail, like a Rottweiler or Doberman, you can still notice it somewhat. With dogs that have a full tail, you can have a much greater idea as to where this dog is at. The tail is straight forward, straight up rather. And still, oftentimes that dog is either focused very much, like a pointer, for example, would be, but typically in a more dominant or ready to spring forward kind of way.
So where could one, I mean, parents with young children, since those are generally the victims, where are this advice, where is this posted? Where can they find this out?
I've actually got a link on my website to a behaviorist called Dr. Sophia Yin, called How to Greet a Dog, and it's actually a little cartoon that, in a funny sort of way, shows how a lot of the reasons why people are bitten is because they're approaching dogs in a way that they would not dream of approaching a person. For example, you would not want a total stranger walking up to your car window and sticking their hand in and saying, "Hi." Yet people do this to dogs all the time.
Right.
You would not walk up to a total stranger and suddenly hug them. Well, this is Miami, perhaps. But,
you never know.
You never know, but it's certainly a risky thing to undertake. Dogs aren't built that way. They don't want a total stranger walking up to them. You know, they want to basically shake hands first, which in a dog's world is allow them to sniff you, interact with you on their terms. A common thing is that I believe you should always ask the owner of a dog, is it okay if I can pet my dog?
Right.
Your dog.
Is it friendly?
Well, again, you still got to use these other things because
right.
Sometimes owners don't necessarily completely understand how the dog is going to react. But that's another safety net, because sometimes people will say, actually, no, we're training him and I'd like him to get to know you first.
Okay. I guess you know this, but on October 2nd, the Miami-Dade County Commissioners voted in favor of an online bad dog registry. Are you aware of that? It displays pictures of menacing canines. It doubles the fines for dog attacks on humans and other animals, and for training a dog to fight, and for inflicting a cruel act upon a dog.
Mm-hmm.
That passed last October 2nd by Miami-Dade County Commissioners. So it's almost like it's a bad dog registry that's going to be online, showing pictures of, I don't know how effective. How effective do you think that's going to be?
I don't really think the dogs are going to care. The effectiveness of these laws that are supposedly going to make our public safer in Miami-Dade County is going to come right down to the pocketbooks of those that are committing the acts, and what kind of further legal actions can they have. There were a lot of DUIs going on before DUI was even a term.
Right.
And once they got all the statistics on that and they showed how important it is for, if one person gets a DUI, it's typically going to cost them at least $10,000 to $15,000, and that number is only going up, and that the DUI number spiked down shortly after that. Well, this is the same thing. When a different leadership was in Miami-Dade Animal Services, some changes were made recently to Chapter 5 in the county a couple years ago by Mr. Dennis Kerbel, the assistant county attorney. And many of these changes were excellent changes in Miami-Dade County. Still, the accountability factor is not there. This is a better step in that direction, but they have to have very incredibly increased fines. where it really hits people and they have to really actually go after them, put the people in place to go after them, take their property, seize their property, put them out so that they really realize what a crucial liability it is to have a dog that may be menacing to society, to really take some sort of advantage. The county even has free resources available for dog trainers and behaviorists that may be able to go out and assist. But people are not that motivated if it really doesn't hit their pocket, unfortunately.
I think they said they doubled the fine
right
now.
It's a good step.
It's a good step, but it's not enough, you don't think?
No. I hope it decreases the number of events that are going out there with different dogs getting out or people being irresponsible with them. Specifically, there's already a known group of dog fighters down in Southwest Miami in the Homestead area, and they just can't seem to nab them, and they can't seem to get hard proof, and they continue doing it, and it's not much. In any one of those fights, they may be $50,000 to $150,000 richer. So a $2,000 fine or that going to $4,000 is not going to do much to them.
We're going to just change the subject for a moment. As you know, the Pets Trust Initiative in Dade County, designed for saving unwanted animals, passed overwhelmingly on a straw ballot on November 6th. In Miami-Dade County, it had like 500,000 votes, 65% of all votes cast. Joining us to discuss what this means is Miami Herald reporter Eleanor Brecker. Hi, Ellie.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
So just for those who are not familiar with it, please tell us what the Pets Trust is and what their goals are.
Well, the short answer is the Pets Trust started less than a year ago as a grassroots effort to convince the county commission that the voters of Dade County would support a tiny little property tax increase to greatly improve animal care and welfare services in the county, which through little fault of the people running animal services has always been an underfunded, understaffed, high kill facility. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants to pay higher taxes either, but a visionary grassroots guy named Michael Rosenberg and his cohorts, Rita Schwartz and Lindsay Gorton, thought up an idea of asking the voters whether they would pay a little bit more. Oh, there's one of my dogs now barking.
In favor of the initiative.
Of course, big Pets Trust supporters. Whether voters would go for this, and they did. So the commission can now comfortably enact the statute that will authorize the tax, that will create a nice pot of money for things like free and low-cost spay-neuter clinics in underserved parts of the county, and educational programs on responsible pet ownership. And boy, do we need all of that in Dade County.
And also low-cost spaying and neutering, I understand?
Yeah, they are going to build clinics probably in deep Southwest and probably Northwest and fund the use of mobile spay neuter vans, that sort of thing.
Are volunteers still needed? We need to take a break, unfortunately. I'd like to talk to you more about this, but are volunteers still needed?
Volunteers are still needed for the 10,001 Miamians campaign. It's a takeoff on 101 Dalmatians, and that's something that Rosenberg et al. Are arranging to keep the commissioners on their toes, that they're still being watched.
And to keep politics out of the equation, I presume?
Yes.
Yes.
Because many people in Dade County don't particularly trust the commission to do the right thing all the time.
Right. But this is a wonderful thing. And Ellie Brecker, thanks so much for joining us just to tell us where things stand.
My pleasure.
Okay. And it is Topical Currents. We are at your service. We have lots of calls and emails. We're with Dr. Ian Kupke of Sable Chase Sable Chase
Animal Clinic.
Thank you. And Adele Miedes, I lost my place. Adele Miedes, we're going to get to your calls and your questions. Please stay with us and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys.
The Cuban Hebrew Congregation Concert Series presents a Cuban Hebrew Hanukkah celebration with Paul Posnack and friends, Glenn Basham, violin, Susana Diaz, soprano, and Anita Castiglione, piano. Featured are works of Ernesto Lecuona and George Gershwin, Roger Zenhard, Ernest Bloch, and inspiring Hanukkah and Hebrew songs. 8 p.m. Saturday, December 1st at Lenox and 17th on Miami Beach. Tickets at 305-534-7213 or cubanhebrew.tix.com or at the door. If you're having a hard time selling that old car or truck or just don't want the bother of selling it, the WLRN Vehicle Donation Program can help. Just call 877-WLRN-CAR, 877-957-6227, or donate online at WLRN.org. Donating is easy when the tow truck comes to your home and picks up the vehicle. They give you the paperwork that you'll need and relieve the stress of what to do with the old car that just won't sell. That's 877-WLRN-CAR or donate online at WLRN.org. We'd like to thank our corporate underwriters, the St. Thomas University, Florida Power and Light, and Belen Jesuit Preparatory School. These corporate underwriters help bring you the programs you enjoy throughout the year. Please join WLRN in thanking them for their continued support.
And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman here. Joseph Cooper returns tomorrow. We're visiting with veterinarian Dr. Ian Kupke of Sable Chase Animal Clinic in Kendall, and Adele Miedes, who's owns Canine Advisors. Before we get to our calls, I'm sorry, callers, we'll be right with you. We just wanted to kind of continue something about the Pets Trust and about the dog biting. Dr. Kupke?
Well, I thought it was interesting us going into a discussion about Pets Trust after we'd been discussing dog bites and unwanted aggression in dogs, because in a sense this all pulls together nicely. Whilst it is not the only reason, in my practice and certainly in Adele's practice as well, we see a lot more bites from intact males and females than
That's
we
correct.
Do in spayed females and neutered males. Therefore, the education into the community to encourage spaying and neutering will certainly go a long way to reducing the incidence of dog bites in Miami. And yes, it's nice that there's a low-cost option out there. My understanding is it's going to be means-tested to allow people who truly have financial hardship
right.
to get this done. But education's the key. In my experience, it isn't really funds that limit people's inclination to spay and neuter. It's personal preference, and a lot of that has to be done in a very positive spirit to get the message out there that this is not only for the health of the community and that's important, but also for the individual health of the pet.
Exactly. Yeah, and this is all about education. I'm so happy to know that's a part of this Pets Trust initiative. Okay, we want to take some calls. Lori's been waiting for a long time in Miami, managing her cat's diabetes through diet. Lori, you're on the air.
Hi.
Welcome.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm calling because there's a lot of information on the internet about, helping a cat's diabetes, perhaps through diet. Of course, we have the cat with injections and on insulin, but I've read that switching to a high protein wet food only diet can help. Is that true?
Well, it's like so many things, it's very dependent on your particular kitty's needs. Some cats can be managed with can have their diabetes managed on diet alone. Others need both, and it's very important. The most important part of that is to make sure your kitty's diabetes is monitored very, very carefully, because
yeah.
unregulated diabetes can develop into something much more dangerous, something called ketoacidosis, where It can be very, very critical. Literally, they could put it could put their life in danger. So, the important part there really is to make sure that you're working in partnership with a veterinarian who's compassionate, that you trust, that you actually feel will work with you towards this goal. Perhaps over time, your kitty can be weaned over to a dietary management of the condition, but it has to be monitored very, very carefully because bad things can happen if it's not monitored.
Of course, he is monitored, but would you recommend switching to wet food only, no dry food?
Well, again, that's a good question. There's a lot of studies either way. In my experience, I find that wet food tends to accelerate dental disease.
Oh, really?
On the other hand, there are people out there who believe that wet food will help with urological health and minimize the formation of crystals. So it partially depends on your own kitty's specific biology and also the kind of food, the make of food, a lot of factors. It's unfortunately something that's very, very individual.
Okay,
thanks, Lori, so much for your call.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Ariel in Plantation. Ariel, you're on the air. Good afternoon.
Hi. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. Am I on the air?
Yes, you're on the air. You're very welcome. Please go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. I have a behavioral question. I have a 7-year-old male, a soft-coated Wheaton Terrier. He's been neutered. Mm-hmm. And he has one specific behaviorism that basically drives us crazy. Generally, he's a very loving dog and well-mannered around people. But whenever we leave the house in particular, he gets very riled up. He'll grab a toy and shake it violently, shake his whole body violently and growl and just be completely out of control. And it's really only, this behaviorism only exhibits itself when someone wants to leave the house. I, for example, in the morning have to push him away with my foot to get to the door because he sort of boxes me in so that I can't leave. I don't know if you've ever heard of anything like that or had any suggestions on what I'm missing here.
Adele?
Hi, Ariel. Thanks for your call. This is Adele. Yes, I've dealt with those issues. More than likely, your dog is showing some symptoms of a certain level of anxiety that's happening when either you or somebody in the household is leaving the house. The dog likely started at some point with a more mild behavior and has now built up to this. And if you continue on this track, letting him go this way, the behavior can likely get worse, sometimes even involving a bite, which oftentimes is when they call me in. Some of the things that you can do to help ease things off without any major training would be, for example, to start changing some of the patterns. Some of the things that you think might trigger him, like you getting up and going from the sofa or chair to the front door, for example, that may start getting him riled up. You may do that a couple times, and you just go like to the front door, touch the knob, and then move back and go back to your seat and finish watching your show or doing whatever you're doing, or go to the kitchen. So really throw him off and include some of the things that you may do now before you leave, like put on your shoes or pick up your keys. Or somebody may have a purse or some sort of bag that they might carry. Those are all things that you can throw into the mix of throwing off some of those triggers that your dog may have. Now, there are some training issues there. The dog boxing you at the door, that's just real simple. We can teach the dog to not do that, period. But you know, when it comes down to the behavioral aspect to reduce that anxiety, you'll want to do some of the same things that you've been doing now before you go out, but actually not go out, so that he sees that sometimes these events are going to happen, but he's not going to get that final you going out, so the anxiety level drops. And doing this over time is something that can only help. If you need any additional training, of course, we're glad to help.
I appreciate that. Yeah, the keys are actually a pretty visible trigger, and as soon as he hears keys, anytime he starts getting on like high alert. So
I just wanted to jump in there real quick. How often do you walk him?
Well, he goes out in the yard throughout the day, every couple of hours.
You see,
and at night I take him for a walk out on the street.
Okay. Well, another thing is to go through the same things that you're going through when he gets anxious about leaving, but associate it with him walking.
That's a good point, Doc.
Yeah.
Repeat that again. I'm sorry. Or I didn't understand.
Basically, that. Whatever set of steps you go through to leave for work when he boxes you in, go through the same steps before you take him out for a walk.
Oh, I do. Yeah, he does the same thing when I take him out for a walk, too. Until he knows he's going with.
Mm-hmm.
If he knows he's going with, then he's okay. But if he knows he's being left behind, or he thinks he's being left behind, he's just as crazy. Anytime anyone's anywhere near the door, he's shoes also. When I'm in the bedroom putting my shoes on, he starts already getting interested in what's going on. So all those things are right. I guess I haven't really tried it over and over again to, you know, keep on doing those, you know, doing those actions and not go out. But I think I'll try that for starters. If not, you know, I'll get the phone number and I will make a phone call because the dog's driving us crazy.
Okay, and what is your phone number, Adele? Yeah, it is.
So you can reach us at 954-923-3440. That's at the office.
And where are you at? Where's the office at?
Well, we have two offices in Miami and in Hollywood, in Broward.
Oh.
You're welcome to give us a call there at 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, and any of my assistants can take care of it. You can also learn more on the website at k9advisors.com, letter K, number 9, advisors.com.
Okay, Ariel, thanks so much for your call. And Dr. Kupke, what is your website?
We're at www.sablechaseanimalclinic.com. So that's S-A-B-A-L, chaseanimalclinic.com. And that's where you can download this behavior poster that I mentioned earlier as well.
Right, for how to approach
how
a dog.
How to approach a dog.
Okay, and Christine in Boca has been waiting a long time. Christine, welcome to Topical Currents. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I actually have two questions, one a behavior question and one a veterinary question.
Okay, start with the one.
Okay, my behavior question is I've got a three-year-old German Shepherd, Lucy. We've had her since she was 3 months old, and she's very sweet and lovable when she's off the leash. When she's on the leash and we try to take her for a walk, she just turns into all teeth and snarls at every dog that passes, barks and lunges. And, you know, I try to snap her out of it before I see her focusing in on another dog. Sometimes she barks at people, too. But it seems like she goes into this frenzy almost immediately. So I want to know, you know, what I could do to stop that.
Okay, Adele.
Classical. This is just absolute classical. This all comes down to leash management.
Mm-hmm.
You have a great dog. If your dog can be off the leash, hanging out with other dogs, she's not aggressive to other dogs. So it all comes down to leash management. There's a little thing called opposite reflex theory, which basically states if the dog feels pressure in any one direction, they're going to pull in the opposite. And that's one of the few innate characteristics of behaviors that we deal with. Most of what we deal with is learned behaviors, either teaching the dog something new or teaching the dog to not do something. But basically, this is an innate behavior. They're all born wired this way. So that means that when your dog starts walking and sees another dog and gets excited, wants to go say hello, now all of a sudden she pulls and then there's tension on that leash. That tension will create her to pull more, which will create more anxiety, which is going to create this very bad sounding bark or growl, for example, at other dogs. It's not a good cycle to go in. The most important thing to keep in mind is you need to learn how to walk your dog with no pressure on the leash, clip hanging and a loose leash. And that, a three-year-old Shepherd usually will get it in 5 to 10 minutes. Most humans, 5 to 10 months. No, I'm kidding. most humans, it take a little longer, but you really want to learn how to do that. Make sure you can walk your dog without any pulling on a leash, and that'll take care of that problem. And that you can learn in one lesson.
Okay, and Dr. Kupke, you were going to add something for that, or you want to just hear
really,
the...
Ditto. I've been learning this with my 14-month-old Dachshund puppy, and finally he's walking nice, loose leashed by my heel, head up, tail up, happy dog. Happy experience.
There you go.
When she starts pulling, then what should I do?
To actually train the dog, what I would do is to begin with, I have to see what kind of drive your dog has. your dog is motivated in certain different ways, and some dogs are more motivated than others in ways that that may be different. So your dog, for example, let's say she really likes a ball or a certain squeaky toy. I would use that to keep her attention, doing short distance heels with the clip hanging and a loose leash, keeping that item up high. If it's a treat, then it is what it is. You use a treat. I'm not a big fan of using treats. I like to find other motivators. Oftentimes praise can be a big motivator. It is could be somewhat tedious if you're just getting started to doing it, but if you're motivated to doing it, I would certainly encourage you to do so. You just have to go little steps at a time. Me, I'd probably get your dog and I'd go more steps to begin with, but you want to at least use some sort of motivator up high, get her attention, start walking. When you start losing her interest, you change direction, squeak that little item, she looks up, a little praise, and you keep going like that. And then you're changing direction and pace continuously so that you can become unpredictable to your dog. Your dog becomes predictable for you because she's constantly looking at you because she doesn't know if you're going to speed up or slow down or turn left or right.
Okay,
Christine, and what was your other question? If you could do it really quickly, because we have lots of calls.
Okay, I've got a cat. He's 5 years old. We had found him as an older kitten, a feral kitten, 5 months old, and he lived under our bed for 2 years. So we had two existing cats. We had to have them live outside because they started spraying around the house, and he got into fights with other cats, our cats. But once he went outside, he started developing all these sores inside his mouth and on his nose. And the vets, you know, our vet's been giving him steroid injections, like every 4 months, every 6 months, it'll clear up. But now it seems to be getting more frequent. He just had a shot last month, but, you know, now once again, his gums are all inflamed and he can't eat at all.
Yes.
So we don't know what to do because I can't bring him inside. It didn't happen when he was inside, but
he didn't do well inside.
So we've heard our wits end. I don't know what to do.
Well, the steroid injections work, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they work, but so now the length of time that he's okay seems to be decreasing.
When you think it through, if an anti-inflammatory injection made the problem go away, then the condition is inflammatory in nature, which is actually a very useful piece of information because it tells us that basically there's an inflammatory process behind it. In my experience, when you see sores around the mouth and nose like this, it comes from over-grooming, and most of the time, that's because of some kind of allergy. And the easiest thing to start with is to make sure that your cat's flea control is 100%. And that means basically getting a quality product once a month, every month. My personal favorite, I like Revolution because it's a 100% flea kill without any side effects. And basically do that first. Keep Kitty on 100% flea control for 3 months or so, and then see whether you find that the severity of this is diminished.
Okay,
Christine.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
It is Topical Currents. We're at your service today with veterinarian Dr. Ian Kupke of Sable Chase Animal Clinic and Adele Miedes. He's the owner of Canine Advisors. And our number is 1-800-743-9576. We have lots of emails and lots of other calls. Let's go to Ruth in Miami, who's been holding for a long time. Ruth, you're on the air. Welcome to Topical Currents.
Thank you for taking my call. I have sort of an odd question. We rescued a black lab. She's about 3.5 years old. She's a sweetheart. Huge. The only thing is she barks at males in the house.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, we're here. We're listening.
She goes with my husband. She loves when she knows already what time he takes her to the park. I mean, she's wonderful. But if he moves around the house, she's after him. And when my grandchild, I think she's herding. There may be a bit of a herder inside of her. Because as long as the kids are sitting still, not babies, they sit still, she sits there and she's thrilled. One gets up, she follows him and starts to bark.
Okay. Who wants to take that?
That that barking is usually for some sort of attention. And even if they're trying to herd, they may be trying to herd the group. So try to get their attention and have everybody move in this direction, or get their attention and pay attention to me. So simple work to reduce the number of times that this dog is going to try to get people's attention, and also to desensitize her from those triggers that are making her do this behavior is, I think, what's going to go a long way in this case. Basically, if you know that somebody getting up like that would make her bark, one of the basic things is teach her a quiet command with a little leash, regular collar on her. You would say the quiet, just give a little tap on the leash when the dog looks up. You praise her. You always praise her when she looks at you. And then when a person tries to get up, if she starts with that bark, then you can say that quiet real quick. She'll look back up at you. You praise her. That's the desensitizing part where the person would just get up and then come right back down. As far as teaching her to not pay attention to you, there's a little thing I call a petting exercise, which is really wonderful. One of the things you may do if you have, are there other animals in the household?
No, I don't.
No other animals. Okay. So what you guys may want to do is, between you and your husband, maybe pay attention to each other without paying attention to her. She tries to get in the middle. Use your body like your legs. So just try to block her off. No pushing her off. Definitely don't use your hands to push her or poke her or anything like that. Hands on the dog should only be for praise. So you want to make sure that your hands are up high, because she's going to, especially if she's a taller dog, she's going to try to get her attention by bumping her nose up against your hand. So keep your hands up high and have her not, don't pay any attention to her. She does some barking. She's going to stay back. She'll be quiet in about 5 minutes. And then when she is, wait about a few seconds, 10, 15 seconds, and then go and praise her a little bit. Little praise to her, and then back over to your husband or whoever you're doing this with. Again, don't pay attention to her for her barking. It might be another 3 minutes. You go right back to her when she's quiet and praise her again. So that's a little exercise, a little petting exercise. Basically, we're going to give her the attention only when she's quiet and she's not demanding it. When she does, we're not going to give her that attention.
Well, the funny thing is, she's my shadow. Wherever I go, she is. And if anybody comes, well, not anybody, she's very good with everybody. But if my husband comes by, she barks at him. Mm. She comes into the bedroom. She sleeps next to me on the floor. I hate to say this, but even when I go to the bathroom and close the door, she sits outside and waits.
Well, sometimes we create a certain level of dependency mm-hmm. with our pets, and that may be something that you may need more training with.
Well, looks like it's for you to do, Ruth. Okay.
She's 82 pounds, let me tell you. So she's something to, she's really being trained, not trained, but taken care of very well. You know, we've always had dogs all our lives. We're no youngsters anymore. So she's our baby. I think maybe that's the problem. She knows
maybe.
That.
Okay, Ruth, well, thanks so much for calling.
Much for your help.
Thank you. It is Topical Currents. We're at your service with veterinarian Dr. Ian Kupke and Adele Mieres of Canine Advisors. We need to take a short break on Topical Currents, and we'll be back with more of your calls and your emails.
You're listening to Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, NPR for the Florida Keys, 91.5 WKWM, and online at WLRN.org. We're funded by listeners like you and by Art Miami and the inaugural Context Art Miami Fairs, December 4th through the 9th. 190 international galleries offering cutting-edge, modern, and contemporary art and curated indoor and outdoor projects. Details at artmiami.com. Join us on WLRN TV 17 for Dr. Furman's Immunity Solution, the program which shows us how we can become more resistant to colds, flus, and even cancer by supercharging our immune system. That's Dr. Furman's Immunity Solution on Thursday, November 29th at 10 p.m. on WLRN TV Channel 17. Merrick Festival kicks off the holiday season early in Coral Gables with the Holtz Children's Hospital 2012 Caroling Competition, a Coral Gables tradition for 26 years. Programs run nightly November 28th through December 2nd. Information at 305-491-4180.
And we're back. It's today's Topical Currents, a little activity in our studio. Wanda Miles has brought in her three dogs to join the program. But Dr. Kupke, you wanted to add something to tell Ruth, who just called about her lab.
Well, you know, real veterinary medicine is a dynamic mixture of understanding behavior, understanding medicine, understanding the environment in which your pets are. And one thing I do see is folks that have these high drive dogs, and the last couple of behavioral collars, one was a German Shepherd, one was a Black Lab. These are high drive, high energy dogs that are basically wound up springs. And I find that if they don't have an outlet, you see unusual behavior. And it's an old saw, but one of the things that I find works almost every time is taking them out for a good long walk. The person in Ruth's situation, the husband, seems to be the invader in that dog's world. Maybe he should be the one taking the dog for a walk for a few weeks. And the relationship's very dynamic. The dogs are wonderfully malleable. As soon as the world around them changes, they adapt to it. Nothing's in stone.
And we had a caller, her name was Bonnie, and she lived on Miami Beach, and I guess she waited for so long that she had to go, but I hope she's still listening, because her question was, how does she get her older cat to accept a kitten, which is what we were talking about,
right.
Because I'm
right.
In that situation before the program began. So do you want to...
Well, there was the issue that the older cat is a rescue, a male, and very bonded to his owner. And in my experience, first of all, dangerous territory introducing a female into a male-dominated environment. Generally, established males do not greet females happily because in the cat world, females tend to be the dominant half of the equation. So first thing I would say is to look at a male. And the other thing is to make sure that the new arrival is a neutered male. And by neutered, I mean well-neutered, i.e. neutered as a kitten, or basically a mature neutered male that basically doesn't have any hormones, isn't bringing any threat into the equation.
And so then, how old would that be? What age range?
Well, a neutered kitten, these days, rescues especially are neutering kittens as young as 8 weeks or so. I tend to leave it a little later, about 4 months of age, but I would say that a kitten that was neutered at 4 months could probably be introduced to a male-dominated household because they haven't really reached puberty yet.
And if her cat is a female, I didn't see on the call if it was male or female.
Female, it can work. There are situations where it has worked, but if you're looking at statistics, there's a lot more against it because especially if you have had the experience where you've introduced a female into the environment and the male wasn't happy, that particular male might just not want a woman in his life.
And if her older cat, I mean, is a female, what kind of...
If the older cat's female, then really the only risk there is that another female may still make a bid for power. And two females in the environment are tricky.
So it's a man's world.
Yeah, pretty
when
much.
It comes to these second
pretty
cats. Okay.
Know.
Well, why don't we, let's go to an email. I have an African spurred tortoise who's my little sweetie pie, Apollo. How do I tell if he's a boy or girl? And why does he poop a white chalky substance? And should I be concerned? Do you know the answer to that? Either
well,
of you?
I'm not familiar with the exact species, but, and I think honestly, for a 100% accurate answer, you probably wanted to talk to an exotic veterinarian, but there are certain ways of examining the ventral surface, the bottom half. Some males have more of a concave shell on the underside, whereas females tend to be slightly convex, rotating outward. But you really need to see an exotic veterinarian for a 100% answer on that question.
Okay, so there you go on that. Why don't we take another call? We have actually a good question from Jesse in Miami. Jesse, welcome to Topical Currents. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I keep hearing a lot of talk, and I've heard it many times over the years, that, you know, having your dogs spayed or neutered is actually better for their health. And I've never really understood why it would be better for my dog's health to have it neutered.
Doctor?
Okay.
Good question.
Great question. Over the years, there's a lot of veterinary literature that's shown a strong correlation between breast cancer in females and not being spayed. One study showed that if you spay a dog before their first heat, you can reduce the risk of breast cancer by over 90%. In the male world, of course, testicular cancer is much more prevalent in male dogs than in male humans. And, of course, neutering removes that from the equation completely. And, of course, behaviorally, there's a lot of evidence that intact males and females tend to be harder to handle and tend to be more aggressive. The other thing, too, is just looking at the reality of being in a house with a dog. Realize female dogs come into heat every 6 months. And they the discharge from that lasts up to 3 weeks, and this is in your house. So there's really no good reason to not spay or neuter a dog, not biologically or health related.
And I heard with cats, it's also very important that they can develop breast cancer or something if they don't get spayed at an early age.
Another thing that'll happen later in life with intact females is they'll develop a septic uterine infection called pyometra, that requires emergency surgery or they die. And again, why sit on that ticking time bomb when it's they don't need their reproductive organs? I spayed my first dachshund when she was 4.5 months old. She's healthy and vibrant and alive, and she's never looked back.
When you, in some of these shelters and Humane Society, you say they're spaying them at like 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. Is that too young?
Well, the discussion really centers on anesthetic safety, and I think the reason why we're seeing these younger spays now is because a lot has changed in the field of anesthesia. And nowadays there are anesthetics that can be safely used on 6 to 8 week old puppies and kittens.
I see.
Whereas 10 years ago there wasn't.
Can I ask a follow-up question related to that?
Okay, quickly if you would, because we're almost out of town. We have lots of calls still.
Yeah, no problem. I have two dogs. One is actually a spayed female, and the other one is an intact male. Is that causing issues, that dynamic of having one spayed and one intact?
Well, the biggest concern I have is your intact male. Testicular cancer is a reality in dogs. Prostatic disease is also something to worry about. There's just really no good reason not to. Think of an intact male as a dog that is always wanting to breed something. They can detect the scent of an intact female from many, many miles away. They're happier if they're not having to deal with that.
Understand.
Okay, Jesse, thanks so much. Let's quickly go to Beatrice in Miami, who's been waiting a long time. Beatrice, welcome to Topical Currents. Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you very much. This is a veterinary question. I have a 4-year-old poodle, and she has a lot of skin allergies. I've taken her to 4 or 5 different vets, and they have given me or given her injections and medicine, but then after a while, that runs out. I've changed her food. I've tried every food out there thinking that it was her food, and nothing seems to work. I don't know what else to do.
Well, the reason why it comes back is because the medicines treated the signs of the allergy without really addressing the underlying cause.
Correct.
And the problem I find with randomly changing foods is that you may get to the answer, you may not. The thing with allergies is that it isn't one particular thing that caused it. It's the unique combination of many things in your pet's world that add up to basically overwhelming her ability to handle it. There is allergy testing available now, which is a fantastic step forward, where basically a simple blood test a simple blood test sent to a lab tells you exactly what your pet's allergic to, and then you can sit down with your veterinarian and figure out what food to feed your pet, what things in your environment to avoid. It's very exciting, and you actually get to the bottom of the problem without having to resort to steroids for the rest of their lives.
And that has been what we've been doing for quite a while.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so Beatrice.
Stable chase, do the testing.
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, thanks so much, Beatrice. We have an emailer, the owner of a senior dog, 18 years old. When she leaves now, the dog cries and howls. She's tried everything, and it's Adriana. She wants to know if she needs to do daycare. Any recommendations for a senior dog with anxiety issues?
Well, there's a medical and a behavioral answer to that. First of all, make sure that there's nothing going on medically that may be making this happen. Sometimes you'll misidentify a behavioral issue and actually the dog is in pain or is suffering from some underlying, not pain, but discomfort that is making the dog more anxious. And then over to the behavioral element.
That's correct. Going back to that physiological element, sometimes a higher level of anxiety because of that event of the person leaving the household creates their glands to run a little bit hotter, like their pituitary, for example. And oftentimes that may end up being part of the problem. From a behavior perspective, when you're dealing with anxiety, it's probably the most dynamic of all things to work with. You really have to identify what are some of the different triggers and then start working towards desensitizing the dog in those triggers and making a reassociation of something more positive with those same triggers.
Well, okay, that wraps up our edition of today's Topical Currents. We thank you, Dr. Ian Kupke of Sable Chase Animal Clinic. First, give your information again.
Sable Chase Animal Clinic at 305-595-1450.
And the website?
Is www.sablechaseanimalclinic.com, S-A-B-A-L, chaseanimalclinic.com.
Okay, and Adele Mieres, your information?
It's K9 Advisors, letter K, number 9, Advisors, and you can find us at canineadvisors.com.
And we want to thank our many callers and emailers. We apologize to those callers and emailers we couldn't get to. Our producer is Richard Ives. Technical supervision by Caroline Brader-Watts. Paul Leary is online producer. We have guest, author, and book links at the Topical Currents Facebook page. And archives and downloads at our new website, WLRN.org. Joseph Cooper returns tomorrow. We look at the current state of freedom of expression in the Western world, and Ariel Gonzalez speaks with Will Schwabli. Thanks for sharing this portion of the day with us. Stay tuned for the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Good.